Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for joining again to learn this week. It's a pleasure to see everybody. Again, anyone who is new this week, each cheer stands alone, but anyone who has come back every week, it's so great to start to get to see this group from week to week. So thank you so much for joining. Tonight, we are going to address a relationship that does not begin in this week's parsha. However, it does conclude in this week's parsha, with the exception of one small midrash that we see later on, and that is the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. And I would say that this is by far one of the most iconic of Torah relationships, that if you're going to think off the top of your head of the top five relationships in the Torah, I would bet that Yaakov and Esav will deal with it. I'm just making sure everyone's muted, will be among those listed. So tonight we are going to look at Yaakov and Esav, even though the relationship did start way back in last week's Parsha. The climax of the relationship, the main focal point, is in this week's Parsha, so we're going to discuss them here. Rivka Imenu, may have shared some experiences. But one specific experience that Rivka Imenu and I shared was that while we were pregnant, we received some solicited and some unsolicited advice. When I was pregnant with my older son, I was living in Washington Heights, and I don't know whether it was the place I was living or my friendly face, but people, for some reason, would come up to me all the time to tell me as if scientific facts about the baby I was carrying. They would know for sure, you know, you're having a boy. Nobody ever told me I was having a girl. That's why I pretty much believed everybody who told me I was having a boy. But they would tell me, oh, he's going to have a lot of hair. He's going to be huge. He's going to be tiny. Everyone has their opinion on the baby you're carrying as if they are doctors. Rivka Imenu, however, sought out the advice she received. I'm sure, like every other pregnant woman, she also received plenty of unsolicited advice. But Rivka Imenu, in the beginning of her pregnancy, which had come after many years of struggling with infertility, Rivka felt that there was something that was not right with her pregnancy. In Bereishis Chaf Aleph, we know that it says that Yitzchak davened for his wife Rivka, and Rivka became pregnant. Vayitrotzu habanim bekerba. We're in the first source on the source sheet. Again, the source sheet is in the chat. Vayitrotzu habanim bekerba. Rivka felt that the children, or the fetus that was inside of her, was kicking nonstop. It seemed, whether it was physically uncomfortable or she felt like something was just strange. Rivka felt like she was having a very difficult pregnancy, whether that was that the children were, or child, she was not aware of the fact that it was multiples at this point. And that may have been part of the confusion with why her pregnancy was so difficult. But she felt like something was strange. We know the famous Rashi that Rivka felt like maybe she was carrying a child with some sort of personality disorder, that every time she would walk past a Beit HaKnesset, or she would walk past a Makom Torah, whatever that meant at that time before Matan Torah, whether it was just Yeshivat Shein Be'iver or any other holy place, she would feel a tremendous amount of kicking, that it felt like the baby was trying to leave her womb. And she felt, great, I'm having a tzaddik. But then she would walk past a Makom Avodah Zarah, which unfortunately there were many of around them. And again, she would feel like the baby was trying to escape from her womb. And she would say, oh no, am I carrying a Rasha? And even more than being concerned about carrying a Rasha, she was concerned that she was carrying a half tzaddik, half Rasha. So Rivka goes to seek out advice. Vayomer Hashem la, shnei goyim bevitnich u'shnei le'umim mime'ach yiparidu u'le'om mile'om ya'amat v'rav ya'avod tzair. This is a jam-packed nevuah that Rivka receives while she is pregnant. And Hashem says to her, whether it was directly from Hashem or it was through Shem and Yeshivat Shem Ve'iver, Hashem says, Shnei gayim bevitneich, there are two nations in your womb. U'shnei le'umim mime'ayach yiparidu. Two nations will come out of your womb. One of the commentators comments here that this was a slight amount of reassurance to Rivka that said, right now you are carrying multiples, but don't worry, both of them will survive. That even on a basic level, no matter what will happen in the future, that they will turn into two nations. Know to begin with that both of the children you are carrying will survive leaving the womb. Ula omi la omi amatz. We're going to look at Rashi to explain that phrase in a second. Virav ya'avod ta'ir. The older one will serve the younger one. In the next pasuk, it says, "Vaymaluya mehalaleda v'hine te'umim bivitna." Again, the previous pasuk does not make it so apparent that it is twins. It says that there are two nations, but it could have been understood that it is one baby that would eventually lead to two separate nations. And therefore, the next pasuk says, when the babies were born, it became apparent that it was twins. Vayitzei harishon admoni kulo ka'aderet se'ar v'yikru'u shemo Esav. The first one came out all red and all hairy, so they named him Esav. V'acharikin yatza achiv yado uchazet be'ekev Esav. The second one came out and was holding on to the heel of Esav. V'yikra shmo Yaakov. V'yitzchak ben shishim shana beladet utam. When the second one came out and was holding on to the heel, it was holding on to the Akev, and therefore they named this baby Yaakov. And it states that Yitzchak was 60 years old when the babies were born. Ve'gdilu hanayarim ve'yihi Esav ish yodei atzayir ish sadeh v'yaakov ish tam yoshev ohalim. From a very young age, the two children have very different personalities, which again makes sense based on the nevuah that Rivka received while she was pregnant. We are going to see that most of the events that we see play out throughout their lives were predicted through that nevuah. That, as we discussed in the Rivka and Yitzchak share, it is unclear whether Yitzchak knew about this nevuah as well, but Rivka was definitely aware that a lot of these situations that arise with Yaakov and Esav were predicted from the beginning. So she says, it says that they grew up and Esav became much more of an outdoorsman. He was a hunter. He liked to be in the field. Whereas Yaakov was a tent dweller. He liked to sit quietly. I always kind of picture the like outdoorsy rough type and like the nerdy little Yaakov sitting in the tent quietly. He was a nice, simple person. And Esav was this yodei atzayid. He knew how to hunt. He knew how to be in the field. Yaakov was the kol guy. He was at home learning. V'ya'ahav Yitzchak et Esav, ki tzayid b'fiv, v'rifka ohevet et Yaakov. From the very beginning, we see that there is a sort of divide in the household, that Yitzchak seems to favor Esav, and it says, ki tzayid b'fiv, because he was a hunter, v'rifka ohevet et Yaakov, and Rivka favored Yaakov. So again, that can be a shir in and of itself. Why did one parent favor one and one parent favor the other? How could Yitzchak Avinu have been blind before he was blind? How could he have been blind to the fact that Esav was such a rasha? That is all a discussion for another time. However, what I want to focus on from this first introduction that we have to Yaakov and Esav is that they are destined for some sort of conflict. That Rashi explains, what is mi'om ya'amatz, lo yishve'u bigdula, that these two sons will never be at equilibrium with each other. Kishezek ham zenofel. When one rises, one declines. That throughout their lives, there will be a sort of balancing act. That Yaakov and Esav will always be in competition with one another. They will constantly be in a situation of one ruling over the other, as we see from the very beginning where it says, Rav ya'avod ta'ir. The older one will serve the younger one. And Rashi just strengthens this point by saying, they will never be equal. One will be serving the other. One will always be going up while the other one is going down. Their destinies will be in opposition to each other. They will never get along. And this is destined from the beginning. And we see from the outset that their personalities just begin to develop so differently. The next episode that we have that gives us insight into their relationship is the episode with the Nizid Adashim, with the red lentil soup. Vayezer Yaakov Nizid, vayavo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayif. It says that Yaakov was at home cooking a red lentil soup. Now, there are different explanations as to why we hear about one of our avot cooking. One explanation is that Avraham Avinu had just passed away and Yitzchak was sitting Shiva. Therefore, Yaakov made lentil soup, which is a round food. The lentils are round because we typically give round food to those that are mourning. So Yaakov was cooking for his father who was sitting Shiva. Another very interesting explanation, which again can be a shir in and of itself, is that Yitzchak, this is the opinion of the Or HaChaim, was that Yaakov was cooking in order to find favor in his father's eyes. He knew that Esau was the preferred son, and he wanted to do something to endear himself to Yitzchak. And therefore, he was putting all this time and effort into cooking this delicious red lentil soup in order to endear himself to his father. But for whatever reason Yaakov was cooking, Yaakov was at home making the soup, and Esau comes in tired and hungry from the field. Now, I'm sure that any of the mothers of older children can understand that this is not a rare situation, that a child comes in at the end of the day angry and hungry, and anything that stands in their way is going to be destroyed, and they need to eat right then and there or else they might just die. They need to eat, and you need to give them whatever you are cooking immediately. Vayomer Esav el Yaakov, hala'itini na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Esav barges in and he says, Yaakov, give me whatever that red stuff is, ki ayif anochi, because I'm exhausted, al kin karashmo edom. Interesting narrator's note. It says that Esav came in and demanded the red lentil soup, ha'adom adom hazeh, this red stuff. Therefore, Esav's nation is called Edom. So if we ever wondered why our galus that we are currently in, that we know is the galus of the descendants of Esav, is called galus Edom, why Esav's generations are called Edom, it's because it all began with him demanding ha'adom adom hazeh. Ve'yomer Yaakov, machrak hayom mipechar chali. Yaakov says, no problem, I just have a small request. If you want red lentil soup, I want your bechorah. Sell me your bechorah, and the soup is all yours. Vayomer Esav, hinei anochi holich lamot, v'lama zeli bechorah. Esav says, don't you understand? I'm starving to death. If you don't feed me, I'm going to die. So what good would the bechorah do for me anyways? He says, sure, take whatever you want. Vayomer Yaakov, hishva'an li hayom v'yishvalo v'yimkor et bechorato l'Yaakov. Yaakov said, I don't want to just deal with a guy who's tired and hungry. He said, make a deal with me. We are going to exchange this suit for this bechorah. They made a vow, and that was that. Yaakov was now the official owner of the bechorah, of the birthright. The Yaakov natan le'isav lechem unizir adashim ve'yochal ve'yish ve'yakam ve'yelech ve'yivez Esav et ha'bechorah. The pasuk emphasizes again, Esav sat down, he ate, he drank, he had a nice meal, and he got rid of the bechorah. It is very clear from these psukim that this was a full transaction. Whether or not it was equal, whether or not Esav was in the right mind to decide to give away something as great as the bechorah, or whether we can just say Esav didn't particularly care, but whatever the conditions were, the bechorah now fully belongs to Yaakov. Esav has disregarded it, and Yaakov is the true owner. And I like to say that this episode begins to give us further explanation into what their personalities are like. Yaakov is not only the tent dweller, he is not only the learner between the two. Rather, Yaakov is also the more thought out of the two. He is the one with greater foresight. He is able to look beyond the situation he is in at this very moment and recognize what will be helpful for him in the future. And he has a very careful ability to understand his surroundings. He's able to look at the small points and say, at whether it was honest or not, Esav will give me his bechorah in this moment. I know how much his food means to him. And Yaakov was able to pick up on that situation, and he was able to optimize it. On the other hand, we see Esav, who we learn very much is a hedonist at heart, that he believes in living in the here and now. He wants whatever is going to make him happiest right in this moment. His physical pleasure is of utmost importance. That is him. Esav wants what will make him feel good, and he wants it right now. He is possibly dramatic that he is going to die if he doesn't eat, but that's his personality. Yaakov is more calm, he is more level-headed, and he has a lot more foresight. While Esav is the one that is hot-headed and red and angry and ready to jump on any opportunity that's in front of him for his own physical pleasure. He wants what he wants right now. So that is our first insight into their personalities, but we don't yet see any sort of conflict. We know that they're different at this point, but we don't necessarily not see them getting along. On the contrary, that seems like they got along great. Everybody walked away from the situation with exactly what they wanted. However, now we go on to the main highlight of their relationship. And that is the brachot story. I remember from I believe it was kindergarten, each person in the class got assigned a parsha, and this was my parsha, so it's dear to my heart. And I remember my mother making for me a felt beard and a felt like arm wrap so that I could dress up as Esav. And I was so excited. I was going to be Yaakov, who went in front of Yitzchak and disguised himself as Esav. So what happens in this story? Esav is old. Yitzchak has aged. He has gone blind and he knows that his days are numbered. He calls in Esav, who he thinks is the rightful recipient of Berachas Avraham, of the bracha of generations, that since Esav is the Bechor, he is entitled to receive this great bracha. So he calls Esav in. He says, Esav, go out. I want you to cook for me. I want you to prepare a nice meal. Bring it to me. We'll eat, and then I will bless you. Esav runs out to the field. Meanwhile, Rivka overheard this interaction. And Rivka says to Yaakov, you must be the one to receive this bracha. You go out to the field. You hunt. I will prepare the food. I will dress you up as Esav, because we know that if your father were to feel you, he would know in a second that you are not Esav. Go out to the field, prepare it, bring it home. I'll dress you up, and you will go in front of your father before your brother Esav gets home. So Yaakov does as he is told. Rivka says, whatever happens in this situation, I will take the blame. You must receive this bracha at all costs. So they come back, and they carry out this plan. And Yaakov goes in front of Yitzchak, and Yitzchak recognizes that something strange is going on, and he keeps trying to clarify who is standing in front of him. And finally, Vayigash Yaakov al Yitzchak aviv v'yemishuhu v'yomer hakol kol Yaakov v'hayidayim yedei Esav. And I can say that this is probably one of the most famous psukim in all of Sefer Bereishis, that when Yaakov approaches Yitzchak, Yitzchak feels him and he says, hakol kol Yaakov v'hayidayim yedei Esav. The voice seems to be the voice of Yaakov. However, the hands are the hands of Esav. Yitzchak is confused about who is standing in front of him. What is this v'hakol kol Yaakov v'hayidayim yedei Esav? Often it is explained on a basic level that the way that Yaakov was speaking, or the sound, not so much the sound of his voice, but more the way he was speaking, that every other word was Baruch Hashem, he blesses God, he's more polite, he speaks softly. Yitzchak says, this is not the way my Esav speaks. I love Esav dearly, but that's not the voice of Esav. However, he felt him, and he said, V'hayadayim yedei Esav. The physical evidence that is standing in front of me feels like it must be Esav. So he is confused. However, the Bereishis Rabba, if you look on the next source, explains this differently. He says that Hakol Kol Yaakov V'hayadayim Yedei Esav is not a statement of confusion by Yitzchak. Rather, this is part and parcel of the bracha itself. This is part of the nevuah. What does that mean? The Bereishis Rabba explains Hakol Kol Yaakov V'hayadayim Yedei Esav many ways. If we look in the second line, it says Hakol Kol Yaakov Ein Yaakov Sholei Ela Bekolo. Hakol kol Yaakov, v'hayadayim yedei Esav, ein Esav sholit ela b'yadayim. That the strength of Yaakov is only in his hands, and the strength of Esav, is only in his voice, and the strength of Esav is only in his hands. That the people that descend from Yaakov are never going to be the hunters. They're not going to be those strong warriors. Rather, the descendants of Yaakov, their strength will be in their mouth. It will be in the way they speak. They will have the power of communication. Whereas the descendants of Esav, their strength will be physical. They will be warriors. They will be hunters. They will be those that work the land. They are going to be the strong, tough ones, while the descendants of Yaakov are going to be the expert communicators. If we look again now in line 4, Hakol kol Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Brachia. Bisha she Yaakov marchin bekolo, yedei Esav sholto dichtiv veyanu kol haida veyavo amalek. Ubisha shehu mitzav tzif bekolo, in hayadayim yedei Esav. The second opinion in the Bereishis Rabba connects us back to the original prophecy that Rivka received while she was pregnant. Then it says, Hakol kol Yaakov. When the descendants of Yaakov are properly using their voice, they're using their power of communication for good, they're speaking properly, they're speaking about proper things, then Esav will have no power over them. However, when they are wasting their words, when they are not using their speech and communication properly, then Esav will be able to rule over them. This feeds into that balancing act, that when Yaakov is using its strength, which is its voice, when they are using it appropriately, they will succeed. However, when they're not using it appropriately, then Yadayim Yaday Esav. Esav will be the ones to take over. And the Bereishis Rabba continues building up on that story, giving an example of a time when the children were learning in the Beis Medrash and the descendants of Esav were not able to take over that town. So you can continue reading there. Now back to the Brachot episode. So finally, Yitzchak seems confused. Who is standing in front of him? V'lo hikiru ki hayu yadav ki de Esav achiv sa'arut ve'yavar chayhu. However, Yitzchak concludes and says, it feels like it must be Esav. So I'm going to bless him. Vayomer, ataz ebni Esav, vayomer ani. And one last time, Yitzchak clarifies, says, is this my child, Esav? And Yaakov answers, ani, it is I. Vayomer, higashali v'ochla mitzayed bini, lema'an tivarachacha nafshi, v'yegeshlo v'yochal v'yavelo yayin v'yisht. So Yitzchak finally says, okay, let's eat. They bring out the food, they bring out the wine, and he says, then I'll be able to bless you. Vayomer elav Yitzchak aviv, gishena ushkena bini. He says, approach my son and allow me to kiss you. Finally, Yitzchak is convinced. He approaches him. He smells his clothes and he says, wow, the smell of my son's clothing is the smell of the land that Hashem has blessed. The bracha begins with a bracha for prosperity of the land. That the land should be successful, there should be dew, the land should be fertile. Virov dagan vitirosh, there should be an abundance of grain. Now we're getting to the juicy part, past the like nice fluffy blessing the land stuff. Now we're at the meat of the bracha. Ya'avducha amim, v'yishachavu lecha le'umim. Other nations are going to worship you. Hevigvir la'achicha, you are going to be an important person. You are going to be a ruler over your brother. V'yishachavu lecha b'nei imecha, the other sons of your mother are going to bow down to you. Orecha aror u'mivarechecha barach. Those who curse you will be cursed, and those who bless you will be blessed. Again, this bracha is called Berchas Avraham, and these words in the end hint to that exact bracha that Avraham received, that Hashem said, v'avarcha mivarechecha v'akalalecha aror, that those who bless you are going to be blessed, and those who curse you are going to be cursed. V'ayhi kasher kila Yitzchak levarecha Yaakov, v'ayhi achyutze yatzei Yaakov, me'ip pnei Yitzchak aviv, v'isav achiv ba mitzido. I always picture it like a rotating glass door, that as Yaakov was leaving on one side, Esav was coming in through the other side. Esav comes in, and he says, let's get ready, my father, get up. I prepared this delicious feast for you. He said, I know what's going to happen. Come, eat up, then you'll be able to bless me. Yitzchak begins to get nervous, and he says, who are you? And it is interesting to note here that every time Yaakov was questioned, are you Esav, he answered very vaguely in order for us to be able to explain it, that he didn't truly lie, that he used very vague language. For example, even as we saw in the pasuk before, that when Yitzchak said, are you Esav, he says, ani. He answers in a way that he says, I am. He doesn't say, I am Esav, but Esav comes marching in and says, Ani bincha bechorcha Esav. Very explicit, very clear. There's no joking around here. This is Esav in front of him, who was here before. V'yecharad Yitzchak charada gedola me'od v'yomer mi efo hu hatzad tzayir v'yaveli v'yachol mikol v'terem tavo v'avarchayhu gam baruch yiyah. Yitzchak says, oh no, Esav, something unfortunate has happened. Your brother beat you here. He also made a delicious feast for me. I ate and I blessed him. Kishmoa Esav et divrei aviv v'yitzak tzaka gedola umara'an me'od. V'yomer l'aviv barchini ani gam ani avi. Esav begins to cry and he says, my father, please, please bless me. V'yomer ba'achicha medmirba v'yikach b'rchacha. Yitzchak says, your brother came and tricked me. He took your bracha. ויומר הכי קרש מו יעקב ויעקביני זה פעמיים, את בחורתי לקח, והנה אתה לקח ברכתי, ויומר הלו עצלת לי ברכה. Esav says, this brother of mine, no wonder they call him Yaakov. He first steals my bechora, and now he has come and stolen my bracha. Didn't you save me any bracha? And interesting to note here, this may have been the first time that Yitzchak heard about the sale of the bechora. That we don't know before this, that anyone outside of Yaakov and Esav knew about the sale of the bechora. Rather, here he mentions it, and I always picture this as kind of the light bulb moment for Yitzchak. That when Esav says, how could he have done this again? Yitzchak realizes and says, that is why Yaakov came and tricked me. He was the one truly entitled to the bracha. And now Yitzchak is able to clean up the situation. Vayan Yitzchak vayomer le'Esav, hin gevir samtiv lach. He says, I already made him a ruler over you. That kol achav natati lo la'avadim, I already told him that all of his brothers would be his servants. V'dagan v'tirosh samchatev ulecha efo ma'aseh b'ni. Yitzchak says, I already gave him all the brachot. Everyone's going to worship him. His land is going to be prosperous. What can I bless you with? V'yomer Esav el aviv, habracha achad hulach aviv, barchini gam ani aviv, v'yisa Esav kolo v'yif. Esav is so emotional. He's crying. He says, please just find even one bracha to give to me. And it is also interesting that Esav, who we picture as this epitome of a rasha, is so desperate for a bracha that we notice that growing up in a household like Yitzchak's must have rubbed off even on such a great rasha as Esav was. That growing up in such a household where God was so present, having two parents who communicated with God, again, we don't know, Rivka is not listed as one of the Nevi'ot, but we are told that she did receive some sort of Nevuah through Yeshivat Shem Be'Ever when she was pregnant. So we know that you have two parents who have quite a close connection with God. You are bound to be impacted by this. That Esav, even though he was a Rasha, he did not follow in the ways of Hashem. He recognized the power of a bracha to the point that he was so emotional. He was begging his father for at least one bracha. Please give me something. I know how important it is to be blessed. Please allow me to be blessed in some way. Vayan Yitzchak aviv vayomer elav hinei mishmanei ha'aretz yihyeh mushavecha umital ha'shamayim imal. Yitzchak says, I can also bless you with material goodness, that you can also have a prosperous land. Ve'al charbecha techyeh, may you live upon your sword, ve'atachicha ta'avod, and you will serve your brother. And he says, no, that if you are engaged in certain things, if you are behaving in a certain way, your brother will be able to cast off your yoke. Again, a confusing statement, but if we look at it in light of in light of the definition of Rashi, that there is always going to be this balancing act, that it makes perfect sense. When you are not acting appropriately, Yaakov is going to be able to cast off your yoke. You are going to worship your brother, but there are going to be times that your brother will be worshiping you. Ve'ishtom Esav et Yaakov al bracha asher barcho aviv ve'yomer Esav b'libo yikrivu yimei evil aviv ve'herga et Yaakov achi. Esav says, I know my father is old. I am going to kill him. I am going to kill Yaakov over this. As soon as my father dies, I am going to kill Yaakov. And that is how we leave off this episode. Yitzchak and Rivka recognize that Esav is extremely angry. He wants to kill Yaakov, and they instruct Yaakov to run off to Haran. And that is what leads us into the rest of the Yaakov and Leah and Rachel. The entire story in Haran is Yaakov fleeing from this bracha situation. That when we leave off and we take our temporary pause on the relationship between Yaakov and Esav, it is a pause at the point that Esav wants to kill Yaakov. There has been this trickery, there has been this deception, and Esav is angry and he wants to act on his anger. And then we pause for 20 years. They do not interact with each other during those 20 years. We don't hear anything about either of them knowing what is going on with the other. However, then we know that after Yaakov gets married four times over, has 12 children, he is on his way back to Eretz Yisrael. They escape from Laban's house, and they are ready to go back to their home. And at this point, Yaakov realizes that the encounter that he has put off for the past 20 years is now inevitable, that he recognizes he is going to have to confront Esav at some point. He doesn't know at this point if Esav is still angry, but he can only imagine, knowing his brother's personality, knowing that they were never the same and that they never got along, he can only imagine that time did not just take away the anger, that Esav is a person who would hold on to this and who would act at any cost on his anger, and therefore Yaakov is terrified. So we see in the beginning of Parak Lamed, Vayishlach Yaakov Melachim Lefanav El Esav Achiv Arza Seir Sadeh Edom. We are going to learn from Yaakov an important point, which is how to prepare for such an encounter, which is applied in modern times to how to prepare for war. What were the steps that Yaakov took to prepare for this encounter? And the first one is that he sent messengers to Esav. Veitzav otam lemor, ko tamrin la'adoni le'isav, ko amar avdecha Yaakov, im lavangarti ve'echar ad ata. Yaakov says, tell them a little bit about what happened, that I've been living with Lavan until now. Vehi li shor v'chamor tzon v'eved v'shivcha v'ashlecha lahagid la'adoni lemtolchi me'inecha. I have many material possessions. I'm going to send them to Esav, my master, in order that he will be happy with me. Ve'yishvu ha'malachim et Yaakov, El Yaakov, Lemor, Banu El Achicha, El Esav, Vigam Holich Likratacha, the Arba Meo Ish Imo. The messengers return and they say to Yaakov, they say, We met your brother Esav, we brought him these presents, and we saw that Esav is approaching with 400 men. Now 400 men is a specific number used often in different places in Tanakh to connote some sort of war, some type of encounter, that 400 men is seen as the great number, that you're truly preparing for war. It is clear that Esav seems to be ready to finally carry out his mission, which is to kill Yaakov. Vayar Yaakov me'od vayitzer lo v'yichatzat ha'am asher ito v'tatzum v'tabakar v'tagmalim l'shnei machanot. We now see that Yaakov moves on to the next step of preparation. If the gifts aren't going to work, he is going to have to physically prepare himself. So he takes all of his possession and he takes his entire family and he divides them into two groups. Yaakov is trying to conserve as much of his family as possible. He says, if Esav comes and he attacks one half of my family, the other half will be able to run. They will be able to flee. They will be able to survive. Vayomer Yaakov Elohei Avi Avram Velohei Avi Yitzchak Hashem Haomer Elai Shuv La'artzecha U'Milaletecha Va'ativa Imach. And then at this point, Yaakov takes the third step in preparation, which is the davening, which is the communication with God. And he says, Hashem, you are the father, of my grandfather, and you are the same God who told me that I should return to Eretz Yisrael and it will be good for me there. Katonti mikol ha'chasadim u'mikol ha'emet v'asher asita im avdecha. He says, Hashem, I am humbled, and it's a beautiful song here, Katonti Mikol HaChasadim. He says, Hashem, I am humbled by all the chesed you have done for me. I passed this Yardin, I took this path originally on my own, and look, I've returned two great camps. Hitzilinina miyad achi miyad Esav, ki yarei anochi oto pen yavo vehekini ekol habanim. He says, Hashem, I'm scared. Please, Hashem, save me. I'm afraid that Esav is going to come and kill not only me, but kill out my entire family. And he said, I am afraid of what is going to happen. Please, Hashem, save me. So Yaakov takes these three steps. He sends gifts. He prepares himself physically and militarily. And he also prepares himself spiritually. He davens, he puts in his hishtavos, and then he asks God to do the rest. However, then we have a strange interlude in this story before we actually arrive at the confrontation. Yaakov is left alone in the night. And of course, there is the midrash that Yaakov went back to get pachim ketanim, some tiny jugs that were left on the other side of the river. And it says in Bereishis Lamed Bet, Vayevater Yaakov levado. That Yaakov is left alone. Ve'avik ishimo ad alos hashachar. He comes into conflict with this man, and he fights with him until alot hashachar, until sunrise. Vayar ki lo yacholo ve'yika v'kaf yirecho v'tikak kaf yarech Yaakov v'hev keyu imo. Quickly, this man that is fighting with Yaakov recognizes that he will not be able to succeed, so he tries to simply injure him. If he is not going to be able to kill him, he injures him, and he hits him in the hip socket. Vayomer shlichini ki alo hashachar. Vayomer lo hashlicha ki imberachtani. He says to Yaakov, let me go. And Yaakov says, I will not let you go unless you give me a bracha. Vayomer elav mashimcha. He says, what's your name? Vayomer Yaakov. And the man, or we will soon find out, the malach, Vayomer lo Yaakov. Lo Yaakov Yomar Od Shimcha ki im Yisrael ki sarita im Elokim v'im Anashim v'tuchal. The angel that we now know, that as it says that Yaakov fought with God, it says your name is no longer Yaakov, your name is Yisrael, because you fought with God and with man and you succeeded. Vayishal Yaakov v'yomer higida nashimcha. Yaakov says, and what is your name? V'yomer lamazet tishal l'shmi v'yivarechu tosham. And he says, why are you asking my name? And he blessed him there. Vayikra Yaakov shim hamakum Peniel, ki ra'iti Elokim panim el panim v'yinatzel nashi. It says that Yaakov called this place Peniel because he says he fought face to face with God here. Vayizrach lo hashemesh kasher avar et Peniel v'hu tzolaya al yericho. It says that the light shone, the light of daybreak, and Yaakov was limping. Al kein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael et gid hanasha asher al kaf hayerach ad hayom hazeh ki naga b'kaf yerach Yaakov b'gid hanasha. It says that because of this incident, because Yaakov was injured in his hip socket, until today we do not eat the gid hanasha, which is the sciatic nerve. Until today it is removed from our meat. However, the question I would like to ask is, why is that important? We have so few mitzvot in Sefer Bereishit. We have Pruvu, makes sense. As soon as the world is created, we know that we have to fill it up. We have to reproduce in order for it to continue. We have the mitzvah of Bris Milah, which also makes sense. If Avram Avinu was the first Jew and he received a Bris Milah, also we should carry this on for the generations. But Gid Hanasha, why commemorate this injury that Yaakov received in every piece of meat we eat? Why is that important to not eat the Gid Hanasha? In order to remember this episode with Yaakov, usually mitzvot that we do in honor or in memory of something that happens is because it is important for us to remember for the generations. Why is this important to us? So keep that in the side of your mind. We'll come back to it in a minute. Let's get back to our confrontation. So now Yaakov and Esav are about to meet, and it says, "Vehu avar lifneim veishachavu arta sheva pa'amim ad gisha tawadachav." Yaakov finally sees Esav with his 400 men. He sees them coming towards him, and he is going to show so much respect to Esav. He bows down to him 7 times until he finally approaches Esav. Ve'arat Esav likrato. Esav runs out to greet him. It says that Esav comes out and he hugs him and he kisses him on his neck and he cries. However, the word vayishakehu has dots on top of it, which we know calls for it to be explained. So I want to look at 2 explanations. Why does this make sense? What was truly going on here? Why did Esav run out to greet Yaakov? Esav was expecting Esav to kill him on the spot. Why did he run out to greet him? Why did he kiss him? And why are there dots on top of the word that he kissed him? So the first opinion is that of the Bereishis Rabba that is brought down in the Midrash. Vayarat Esav likrato v'yishakehu. If you skip down to the third line, Amar lo Rabbi Yanai, im kein lamana kudalav. If you were to say that he simply was so overwhelmed with emotion that Esav just ran out to kiss him because he was so excited, that doesn't make sense because there are dots on top of the word. Ela milameid shelo ba lenashko ela lenashko. He says Esav did not come to kiss him, rather he came to bite him. One slight change in letter, however, a very different meaning. If someone runs out to bite you, they probably do not mean to wish you well. V'na'aseh savaro shel avinu Yaakov shel sheish v'kahu shinav shel oto rasha. It says in that moment, the neck of Yaakov turned to marble, and when Esav went to bite him, his teeth fell out. So why does it say they were crying? Yaakov was crying about the state of his neck. And Esav was crying over the state of his teeth. That this was one big disaster. Esav planned on running out, killing Yaakov on the spot by biting his neck, such a brutal way of killing. But Yaakov's neck turned to marble, and Esau's teeth fell out of his mouth. And it brings us a pasuk from Shir HaShirim that says, Savarecha kim migdal hashin, that we see that for some reason this language of the neck turning to marble was not uncommon, that it was a description that was used later on in Shir HaShirim. So that's the first opinion, Bereishis Rabba. Esav did not mean to kiss him, rather he meant to bite him. And that would be in line with what we would expect to happen at this encounter. However, Rashi explains and says, if we look at the second line, Amar Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Halacha hi biyadua she'esav sone es Yaakov. We cannot say that Esav just saw Yaakov and wanted to kiss him, because halacha hi, it is halacha. It is so well known, it is so definitive that Esav hates Yaakov. That would be an impossible situation. Ela kishenim keru rachamav be'oto sha'a, v'nashko b'chol libo. Rather, at that, only that one moment, he saw Yaakov treat him with such respect, all of the bowing, all of the gifts that he sent him, and he felt good about himself. And therefore, in that moment, he had pity on Yaakov, and he didn't kill him right then and there. He actually kissed him in that moment. However, this statement of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is very notable. Halacha hi she'esav sone es Yaakov. It is the most well-known fact in the world. It is a halacha. Everyone knows that Esav hates Yaakov. So now what would you expect is a great battle where they're fighting arm in arm. However, that's not what we have. What we have is that they talk a little about their possessions. Esav says, who are all these people? He gets introduced to Yaakov's entire family. Each one approaches and introduces themselves. And then they kind of decide how they're going to leave. Yaakov says, we can go at the same pace in different directions. You can leave first. I can leave first. And then it ends off, Vayashav b'yom ha'hu, Esav l'darko se'ira. It ends off, and Esav goes on his way. And that's it. What in the world happened here? We know that from the beginning of time, they were destined to not get along. Everything along the way led up to the fact that this would be a terrible clash. It would be this huge confrontation. And Yaakov clearly believes that because he is terrified. However, they arrive here, and whether Esav begins off this encounter trying to kill Yaakov, or whether he doesn't, whether he is overwhelmed with rachamim in that moment, it totally fizzles out. It falls flat. Absolutely nothing happens here. How does this make any sense? It doesn't make sense with the nevuah that Rivka received. It doesn't make sense with any of their previous encounters that this encounter would go the way it did. So how do we explain this, and what can we learn from this? And I think the message that we can learn about this episode that we can apply for our lives comes from the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch is a sefer that was written by a father to his son anonymously in honor of his bar mitzvah, and it is explanations or an attempt to provide an explanation for each of the mitzvot. So in Sefer Achinuch, mitzvah Aleph and Bet, it talks about the mitzvah of Gid Hanasha. The message we are going to learn about the confrontation in general comes from the microcosmic event of the confrontation with the angel. It says, Shalol le'echol Gid Hanasha. This is the last source on the sheet. Shalol le'echol Gid Hanasha. We are not allowed to eat the Gid Hanasha. Ve'ishlach Yaakov zeba mitzvah lo ta'aseh echad. We have one mitzvah lo ta'aseh in all of this story of Yaakov in Vayishlach Yaakov, and that is v'hi azharat gid hanasha. And this is the warning against eating the gid hanasha. Shene emar al kein lo yachlu b'nei Yisrael at gid hanasha, because we are told that b'nei Yisrael may not eat the sciatic nerve. V'hai lo yachlu lo nomar al derech zippor kilomar mipnei she'irad avar zeh be'av nimna'im habanim mila'echol oto hagid. And he said it is very interesting how we are taught this mitzvah, is that it is told within the context of the story, that we are told what happened to Yaakov, and we are then told almost as a commercial break, because this happened to Yaakov, now this is what we have to do today. Ela azharat Hashem yibarach shelo yachluhu. So why did Hashem command us that we cannot eat the Gid Hanasha? And now the Sefer Achinuch shares a beautiful idea that will answer our question about the confrontation. Misharshei mitzvah zu, kidei shetihia remez li Yisrael. This is meant to be a hint, a sign to Bnei Yisrael. She'af al ki, she'yisablu tzarot rabot begalot, miyad ha'amim u'miyad Bnei Esav. It said it is meant to stand as a symbol to B'nai Israel in the Gullus, when we are being oppressed in general by the other nations, and specifically when we are being oppressed by B'nai Esav, as we are today, that we are in Gullus Edom. We believe that right now we are in the Gullus of Esav. Yihyeh b'tuchim shelo yovidu. This Gid Hanasha will be symbolic to us that we will never be completely destroyed. Ela le'olam ya'amod zar'am ushmam. Rather, forever we are going to exist. Ve'yavo lahem go'el v'ga'alam miyad zar. And that we must believe and remember when we carry out this mitzvah of not eating the Gid Hanasha that eventually we will be redeemed. Why is that? Why should the Gid Hanasha be this beautiful symbol for us of our everlasting people, of the strength to continue, that we will never be destroyed by our enemy? Why is that the symbol of the Gid Hanasha? Ubizichram tamid in yanze al yad hamitzvot shetihiyah lezikarun ya'amudu be'emnatam ubitzidkatam lo'olam. This is the purpose of a mitzvah that is meant to be a memorial of something, that we are always meant to remember the original situation in our lives today. The man that fought with Yaakov at the river is brought down in Kabbalah to be the Sar Shal Esav, the angel of Esav himself. He wanted to uproot Yaakov from the world. He wanted to destroy Yaakov. He wanted to destroy him. He wanted to destroy his generations, but he was not able to. However, he was able to harm him. He was not able to destroy Yaakov. He was not able to cut off his generations. What was he able to do? He was able to leave his mark, though, on him. And it says so too. The generations of Esau are always trying to destroy the generations that came out of Yaakov. But we must recognize that just like this Malach Hashem was unable to succeed, was unable to destroy Yaakov, so too the B'nai Esau will not be able to destroy the B'nai Yaakov. Just like we saw with Yaakov, that when the sun came up, he began to heal. So too, he says, so too, when the light shines, when the light of Mashiach comes into the world, so too, B'nai Israel, the descendants of Yaakov today in our generation, will be saved from the generation of Esav. We will be redeemed ultimately when that sun comes, when the morning comes, when the dawn of Mashiach is upon us. So how does this explain we understand now how it explains the Gid Hanasha, that the Gid Hanasha is meant to be symbolic from that confrontation with the Malach, that just like the Sar Shel Esav, the Malach of Esav tried to kill out Yaakov, so too the descendants of Esav are constantly trying to kill out the descendants of Yaakov. So how does this explain the strange confrontation? Why does this confrontation between Yaakov and Esav fizzle out? Because Hashem is sending us a message. Hashem is saying, just like there was this very intense struggle between the Malach and Yaakov, so too, from the very beginning, there is always a struggle between the descendants of Yaakov and the descendants of Esav. From when they were in utero, Rabbi Beryl Wine comments that this entire story, the constant conflict between Yaakov and Esav, is comparable to that of anti-Semitism. That throughout all of our history, we encounter these conflicts, that the B'nai Esav, the enemies that are around us, are always trying to destroy us. And they will point to the different instances. They'll point to the stealing of the Bechorah. They will point to the stealing of the bracha. They will say that we did this and that throughout history, and that's why they hate us. But Rabbi Wein says that unfortunately what it comes down to is that from conception, there is this inherent struggle between Yaakov and Esav, that between the descendants of Yaakov and all of our enemies around us, there is a struggle. And Hashem is telling us that it is intense and you can be injured along the way, just as Yaakov was injured along the way. However, they will never be entirely successful. that the descendants of Aesop will never succeed in completely killing us out. That when we come to this final confrontation, it seems so often that the inevitable is coming, that Aesop will finally destroy Yaakov, and then it fizzles out. That we believe that Hashem will never allow this to happen. That Hashem will not allow us to be defeated by the children of Aesop. And that is what we remember when we carry out this mitzvah of Gid HaNasheh. That just like the Malach did not succeed, so too, even though no matter how difficult Jewish history gets, no matter how intense the struggle, the Sar Shel Esav will never be able to fully uproot Yaakov Avinu. He will never be able to destroy us. And all of the nevuah that we saw along the way, whether it was through the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov or to Esav, or whether it was through the original nevuah, we have a message that how do we make sure that the descendants of Esau are never able to kill us out? We make sure that we are embracing our inherent qualities as the descendants of Yaakov, that we are embracing our kol, our power of communication, that we are following the ways of Hashem because we know, as Rashi said in the very beginning, mila'om, mila'om ya'amat, that when one is doing well, the other will never succeed. That we will never be at equal playing field, that if we do what we are meant to do and we follow in the ways of Hashem, and we use our power of our voices, and we use our ability to follow after Hashem, then Rav Ya'avod Tzair, the older one will always have to serve the younger one. And obviously this is complex. We can't say that evil is so clear and the good side is so clear, because we see that these were complex characters. That Esav, as we said, was a Rasha who craved to be blessed. And that Yaakov was a tzaddik who for some reason felt he had to engage in this sort of tricky manner of accomplishing what he needed. So there's complexity on both sides, but when it comes down to it, Hashem is making us this promise, and he says, if you embrace being the B'nai Yaakov, I will never allow you to be wiped out by the B'nai Esav. May we be able to internalize this and look around at the struggles that we face and recognize Hashem will never allow us to be wiped out. We must embrace being B'nai Yaakov, and we must continue to use those strengths, and Hashem will never allow us to be wiped out. Thank you so much for joining this week. If anyone has questions, you're welcome to write in the chat or ask out loud.